Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive within the world of Warhammer 40,000. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And my co-host, Jim.
Yo.
The crew's all back here today, and with perfect timing, we've got lots to talk about this week. Gen Con was just over the weekend, and Games Workshop, interesting enough, had some new goodies to unveil. We'll start with the big one. Black Templar getting the Sisters of Battle treatment with their own little box of all the new stuff in one box. So what are you guys' thoughts on Black Templar?
Go ahead, Jimmy. You know?
I mean, it's a bitter pill to swallow when, like, not even a successor chapter space, a bigger kind of...
It feels like they're restoking an old wound, because when I first started playing 40K, Black Templar were like basically how Admech and Drakari are now, the crazy overpowered menace that has plagued all the competitive tables. And so I was kind of glad to see them kind of fade away a little bit. But this, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, okay, some new models, I guess. I haven't seen any rules changes, so it could all be for naught. But it just seems like, okay, more new models. Meanwhile, they still have fine casts. Aspect Warriors lying around. Thanks, appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get what they're trying to do, and just feels, it always feels weird when like chapters like this get so much attention. And I know they're in like the third edition box and haven't had a codex in like many editions, so just feels weird that now they would choose as the time to like bring them back. You know, it's not really based on any campaign. There's not really like a, you know, specific thing going on where they're like, it makes sense. It's just kind of a random release in the middle of the game when we're so far behind. So
yeah, not sure how it really helps things along, but it's interesting. It's getting a lot of attention, and like I said, I know there's a lot of Black Templar players out there that are excited about it. But to your point, yeah, it's not tied into, as far as I know, they're not even in the, I forget what the second book is called now, it's Octaris campaign book. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So guess we'll see what happens when that comes out. Helbrecht was announced today. He still looks goofier than ever. Never understood this look without his helmet, that strange headdress he's got on. I don't know. It's the strangest thing. I never liked him. So, but like I said,
If you think he looks weird with that headdress and no helmet, you can have him with the headdress built into a helmet.
Oh, God. Okay. Jim, what were you going to say?
Yeah. I said I actually like the model. I just hate the diorama base with all the dudes on it. If it was me, I'd put any of those guys on it, and I'd just have him. Apparently, he's on a 60 mil base, which is kind of crazy. But...
I was about to ask, what size base is he on? Because that would definitely affect, you know, the whole close combat and how many.
Yeah, 60 mils. They said on the Warhammer community because people were asking today on the site. It was pretty massive, but I don't know. I wouldn't put those little guys on. I don't know. I feel like it takes away from the model, and I think the orc takes away from the model as well. I would probably not put either of those on the base. But I think the actual model is pretty cool. It's weird that he doesn't have black armor. Like, isn't that the whole thing with Black Templars? They paint their armor black.
Yeah, I kept looking at it. I was like, yeah, it's black and red. I was like, oh, he looks like my college alma mater. So interesting. Okay. Other new releases, and this one I thought was very curious from very many reasons, was the Kill Team release. And normally it's like, oh, okay, Kill Team, it's its own separate game. But so far we've seen all the Kill Team stuff ported over into 40K. So right off the bat, we have a new Sisters of Battle unit, which I was like, didn't they just get a codex? Why wasn't this in the codex?
Yeah, it's dumb. Also,
okay.
I mean, I like the idea that they can use Kill Team as a vehicle to like basically do spot upgrades or spot releases for certain factions, kind of like the Tau upgrade kit and like the Death Grips or Krieg and like the Orc Commandos. Like, no, obviously Orcs just came out with their book, so it doesn't make I assume that Commando team will get its own separate release at one point, but I like the idea that they can use it as a vehicle to like release like maybe do a Kill Team with Berserkers or Kill Team with like an Aspect Warrior kit or something like that. So it's like if they don't want to do like a full army release, or they want to get a kit out and not just kind of randomly release it, they can use Kill Team as a vehicle. So I think that's cool. What I don't like about it is that they're not actually using it to release desperately needed models, but instead giving more units to armies that already have them. So I don't know why Sisters needed a unit of Space Marine Scouts that are Sisters. They're basically Sister Scouts, and they look like they're a Mordheim Warband. I guess my biggest peeve is like, why weren't they just in the main book?
Yeah.
That book was just literally released. And it's not like they didn't know these were coming out. So now you either need a separate release supplement, I guess, or already you need like an FAQ of some kind or like addition to your codex to play these like 2 months after the book comes out, which is kind of
unless
silly.
They intend these models to only be for kill team.
I just don't see that happening though, I guess. Or that seems even dumber.
Yeah, I was just kind of lost on this one. Because first of all, like we said, did they really need... I mean, you thought they were scouts. I thought of more like Black Templars. They were neophytes or whatever like that. I was like, okay. Set something in the...
Sorry, I just mean like they're Space Marine scouts.
I think yours is more accurate. That's a good way to describe them. Because, yeah, they're very light armor. And yeah, they do look like them. They look like a Mordheim band than anything else. But, just looking at the... Sister's Codex, was this something they needed? Did I miss that? That they needed a less expensive light unit? I didn't realize that.
To be fair, Sisters only have one troop choice, so I guess in a sense, it does make sense that they would get another one, but they could have easily just given them one of the other units in the book as a troop choice. Like, they could have given, like, many other units, because like, they have a lot of posse kits. Any one of which could have easily been troop choices, or yeah.
Okay.
But again, it's not about like, did they need a second troop choice or should they release this unit? It's why did they hold it back from the book when clearly whoever wrote the book knew these models are coming, right? Because these models were sculpted 2 years ago and that book was written like a year ago. So it's not like whoever was writing the book didn't know that there was these models coming. So they could have easily included this data sheet in the book and released them and, you know, off we go. And I don't think anyone would have complained. The fact that now, I mean, I'm not a Sisters player, but I'd be pissed. Now I got to get a whole new like... I'm not going to carry around like an FAQ slash whatever right. To play these guys.
Okay. The other half of this box is the Tau thing. And that's so Tau Pathfinders, interesting enough, is they're getting an extra sprue of heads and arms. So adding more war gear. Most of the war gear is going to be more related to, obviously, kill team. But I thought this was a clever way of upgrading older models that may not be that bad. So I didn't think this was that far off, but I was kind of like, Tau? Oh, well, I guess so. I mean, at least Tau gets some love. So
I also hate this.
Okay.
And the reason is like, they know enough to know that, like, at this point, like, just give us a freaking new kit. Like, why are we getting upgrade sprues to, like, 20-year-old kits? It's the same thing they did with the Cadians, right? Like, it just feels like there's the bare minimum effort to throw that faction a bone. Like, that Cadian infantry upgrade kit, I mean, those Cadian models they came out in the Eye of Terror campaign in 3rd edition. So what was that, 2002, right? So it was like, those are like a 20-year-old kit. And, you know, we've had 5 Barney's Khalgars since then and 13 warbands for Necromunda. So it's not like they can't quickly and easily sculpt a set of 10 infantry models that are human. But instead, it's like, here's an upgrade sprue, which is like the bare minimum. And like, I don't know when, like, I don't know how old that Tau Pathfinder kit is. Like, I don't know if it was part of the original Tau release or if it was one of the second waves. But if you look at those old kits, they're quite like, they're pretty bad. Like, there's not a lot on them. They're pretty sparse. Like, you don't get the kind of value. And like, I guess like, I'm just looking at it right now. You don't get the kind of value in like, I guess, dynamism as a newer kits. It's a lot of like, let me just see your Pathfinder kit. So yeah, if I'm looking at the sprues right now, and it does, it definitely looks like, you know, the old sprue, like it looks like one of the like medium age sprues. Yeah. Like there's still a lot on it, but so I'm not sure how old it is, but yeah, just, I don't know. It just feels again, like, is this all we're going to get for Tau? If I was a Tau player, should I be happy or should I be sad? Right? Like you're kind of in this, it's kind of like a split position where it's like, I guess I'm happy I'm getting something, but I'm also sad if this is all I'm getting. And you just never know. So,
Ray, what do you think?
I don't know. When it comes to the kill team, I feel like, you know, we could have seen a better variation. Instead, basically what we're seeing is we've gone an Imperium faction and a Xenos faction in the first one. Now here we are in the second one, and it's another Imperium faction and Xenos faction. And I don't know, I just kind of feel like they could have, you know, actually had a bit more variation in the factions that they chose. Instead, they chose to go, you know, half the factions are going to be Imperium.
Yeah, for whatever reason, they're keeping anything Chaos under lock and key. with the exception of the latest Blood Bowl team, but that's another story. I mean, there's like nothing other than what, you know, came out in Thousand Suns trying to give us kind of read the tea leaves of what the Chaos Space Marines are going to look like in 2022. But yeah,
speaking just why since you mentioned it, if you had told me we were going to get a Korn Blood Bowl team before Korn Berserkers, I would have said that you're a crazy person. But here we are.
Yeah, I looked at that. I hit the flip through the Korn, the Blood Bowl rulebook. Was it?
Yeah, they finally released Korn Berserkers, but they're not. They're for
Blood Bowl. It's just like,
so I guess we got our wish.
Yeah. I had to look through that. I was like, was there ever a Korn?
I think they're actually called Korn Berserkers too. In the like, that's the name of the position on the team.
Oh my god! I just looked at that. I was just like, did we really need another Chaos Blood Bowl team? Okay, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, but, you know, I think that's the, so for me, like, ultimately, that's the beauty of the separate studios. And I really do think that, you know, I assume that they have separate studios for specialist games versus, like, the main range versus 40K AOS for sculpting and stuff. Like, I assume it's not like, but I guess what it begs is when you look at something like the amount of specialist games releases that they've had in the last, year, as far as kits, especially like infantry, human-sized infantry, right? That's literally all they've released for like the last 2 years. And it seems like they're releasing a new gang every, you know, month, right? Or a new few characters or new whatever, a new Blood Bowl team or whatever. Like it feels like their pace is actually quite fast for like, I assume a team that is not as big as the main range team. But given that, it just makes the lack of, you know, a guard re-release or cow or anything like that much more. I guess what it highlights is that they actually can produce models that quite fast, but they just don't like to release things that fast because it feels like the main studio likes to hold back releases and kind of release things as part of like some larger initiative, whereas the Blood Bowl guys, there's no like global event or, you know, campaign or book that they're trying to sell you on top to release it. Like they can just kind of make the kits and release them, you know what right. I'm saying?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, yeah, there's no beginning of the season and here's the new.
Yeah, there's no like army book where they have to wait for like 30 different kits to get it out. It's just like, hey, when this is ready, it's just like we just send it out and here's the rules.
Yeah, I guess that's to tidy it up with a bow here. The thought I had was, I don't think there was going to be anything in that Pathfinder box that puts Tau way over the top, so we still need a codex. And even if just from a kill team standpoint, it is, they're really driving home the, if you have a, we'll just call it a new edition team, it's like when eighth edition codex versus eighth edition index, that compendium is, it's thick because it has every army in it, but there's not a lot of depth to it. So yeah, if you're playing Sisters, Tau Pathfinder team, Orcs or Gearkrieg, you're way ahead of everybody else right now if you're playing.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at, I'm sure we'll talk about later, but like the Las Vegas team tournament, like the team compositions, just almost every team is like 3 out of 5 base new books, and the teams with better players all have like new books because everyone recognizes how good they are and how necessary they are to compete. So
yeah, unfortunately, and we talked about that with the lack of the differential being added to the score, there's almost no incentive not to do that, so mm-hmm. Unfortunate. So yeah, let's transition to that. So we have the Las Vegas team tournament as well as the LGDT, I think I added an extra letter there. London Grand Tournament, what I was trying to say. All coming up this weekend, and very different approach. I think the team tournament, which usually brings out crazy, skew lists to skewer, all that guy kind of got killed with the team tournament format, which we talked about in our last episode. And meanwhile, in the London GT, you're seeing all kinds of weird skewy lists. So I'm just like, what is going on? So,
well, I think it's the sad thing about both these events is like, they're not really going to be very meta defining, I guess, in a lot of ways. Like the big thing about the LGT is it's a 5-round, 800 player battle points tournament So for those that don't, what that means is that it's a 0 to 20 score differential, and win loss draw actually doesn't matter. And it cuts to the top four after five rounds, which means with 800 players, assuming you have, even if you had five wins, quote unquote wins, you're still not going to necessarily make the top five, top four. But in fact, you need basically need to get 100 points or close to 100 points. I bet you 97, 98, sorry, I bet you you need probably an average score of like 90, 96, 97 to make the top four. You probably actually need a perfect, almost a close to a perfect 500, to be honest, to make that top four. Which what that means is, A, you're going to have a lot of lists that are designed to do that, which means a lot of skew lists. So even though there's a good list that basically could go 6-0, win an LVO or whatever, if it's not a list that can get 100, right? So look at Death Guard. Death Guard's a really good example of an army like this. Death Guard is not an army that gets hundreds because it's too slow to do it. So a lot of times you're winning, but maybe you're winning like 80s or low 90s. It's just not a list that has enough offensive power and say speed to get those big wins really easily and just kind of alpha your opponent, but it wins the game kind of slow and steady. And so armies like Death Guard are not going to do well, or the top players are not going to run them. And because those armies are not being ran, people are not going to bring armies to counter them. So not only is it a matter of the top armies are not going to be there, but the counter to those top armies are not going to be there. So both the armies that are the best in the meta and the armies that beat the armies that are best in the meta currently in singles and normal singles, none of those are going to actually be the winning ones. What are the armies that are going to be the winning ones are the ones that skew the hardest, that can basically luck out on matchups in those five rounds and hopefully not hit their bad matchup and get those 100 points that might not actually go all the way in like a 7 or 8 round tournament, but in a 5 round battle points tournament where you just need to pump as many points in, those are the armies that are going to do well. So in that sense, the meta is like completely different than the traditional meta. And the team tournament is the same because, again, it's kind of the opposite problem where, like, because we're not playing differential, it's almost like the tournaments are backwards. I don't know. Very much. It's so weird. Yeah.
It's very bizarre. Yeah. Without the differential, everybody has to win at least three games to win the round in the team tournament. It doesn't matter by what. So it's like everybody's got, okay, you got your obligatory sisters, Advac, and Drukhari list. And then, so does it really come down to who can outpilot the other player, or is it really going to come down to the coaches picking the right matchups?
I hope it doesn't come down to that, because I'm the team captain of my team, so that's that honor falls to me. That is one thing that I think is going to be the biggest factor, and you know, one thing that I think you're going to see in the teams that are doing well are the ones that win the matchups, because there aren't, it's such a small pairings process with only five teams and only basically three decision points, and really like there's only really like two big decisions in that whole. It's like, what team do you put down first, right? And then what team do you put down second? Those are kind of like your main two decision points, right? Like because you're not going to choose your attackers. There's so few. Like the tables are player placed terrain, so it doesn't have the traditional, you know, team tournament of light, heavy, and medium where they're pre placed and you can look at the tables and pick the tables. So although there are tables where there's less player placed terrain, it's still pretty heavy by, like, I'd say, like WTC standards. Like the light tables at WTC are quite light, to the point where it is actually like an advantage to play on the light for like shooting army. Whereas even though like the light, quote unquote, light tables at the LVTT, because they did include all the terrain packs in the player pack, are not that light. Like they're probably like an average table. And so even, you know, and there are some heavier tables, but again, they're probably more standard, just like, you know, tables. So I just think at the end of the day, it's just going to come down to like the team that wins is going to really come down to player skill and just better army lists. I don't think it's going to be like a, which I guess it is the what we want, but smart pairings are not going to save you here that much, I guess, compared to regular team tournament, where you can maybe mitigate some of the better players by giving them like a blocker list or something right. Like that.
Now, team lists were due today. So if you have, and right. So they get to give an extension over the weekend. I haven't seen anything that really leapt up to it, but is there any like anti meta lists that you've seen out there that this is basically my defender list?
I don't know if they're listed alive, to be honest. Yeah. So I haven't even looked. I got our team listed, and I have to give a huge shout out to every team captain who's ever team captained a 40K team, because I thought herding like a classroom of children would be hard, but getting four other adults to submit lists, fill out spreadsheets, get them to like put in their matchups, all that kind of stuff, seemed to be the hardest thing in the universe. And so shout out to all the WTC team captains for all the years of putting up with me and everyone else on teams, because it was literally painful trying to get people on my team to like just submit their list in like our Google Docs and to just fill out like their matchup documents. Felt like it was like I was like nagging so hard. I'm like, guys, please don't make me do this. You guys are all grown men, and like I don't have time for this. Like, can you guys please fucking just fill it out? My mind. So shout out to all the team captains out there. I was like, this is the first and last team I ever captained.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world. So, and we're curious to see how it all pans out, and in the end, what the total experience is. So, you mentioned you'd probably be traveling back the day we record. So, we'll talk to you the week after. But
yeah, I'll let you know if I'm available. Yeah. But I might be back pretty late and tired. Not want to talk 40K after doing it.
Yeah, it's going to be a long haul. So.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast, here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. Just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast. The order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So, go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
Another crazy news: all of us got a couple games in over the past a few episodes. So you actually went to an RTT, Jim?
I actually went to a GT, but I only played the RTT. I only played an RTT birthday game. So I went to, we were supposed to have a GT here about 3 weeks ago, but COVID got canceled. So we ran like a 30-man GT instead. And I just did the first day, first night and day, but it was a good first day. Went 2-1 with my Thousand Sons, losing to the eventual winner, Alex McDougall, who's my competitive corner and one of the Art of War guys, the winner of the event. And yeah, it was a fun event, and it was good to have another game scheduled this week just for practice. And then I'll probably try to get a game. Yeah, new Thousand Sons are freaking fun, man. Those psychic phases are like a lot of ridiculousness. And it's pretty gross, like what you can do. I think the biggest thing with my game against Alex, my loss was like, I actually only lost by 2 points. So it was a very close game. It came down to literally the final dice roll, but it didn't have to. And that was one of the big things that, like, I think I want to stress. Like, oftentimes we look at a game and we're like, oh, we lost because of dice. And although I did lose the game on that final dice roll, like, literally what happened is I needed to make, he did 10 wounds to my 3 rubrics, and I needed to save 5 of them so that one was left on one wound. And as long as I saved average, I would have held one objective, which would have given me an additional 5 points, and I would have won the game by 3. So it's easy to look at that and say, I should have won. I lost on the dice roll, but there was like probably at least another half dozen times in that game that I made like very obvious, stupid mistakes that would have given me points to have allowed me to win the game before that dice roll even mattered. It was actually just lucky that I still had a chance to win in the end on that dice roll. Like, I probably should have lost that game based on some of the mistakes I made. And I think the good thing about that game was that, like, I was able to just, it really like reminded me of how practice is such an important part of playing, because I literally like my first turn, I just forgot to do my, it was vital intelligence. I just forgot to do my data intercept for my like first turn, which was just like, I just didn't do the action, and I had a full army that was just sitting there doing nothing. So it's not like my units were busy doing stuff, and that would have been 3 points that I would have gotten. So literally first turn, had I just literally said, hey, this unit's going to do the vital intelligence or the data intercept, and I would have gotten 3 points turn one or on my turn two, and that I would have won the game right there. So just like a small thing like that caused me to lose the game. And that's just comes down to practice and not playing enough. So just for anyone out there that's like, how do I get better? I mean, the best thing you can do is just play lots of games and practice and practice and practice, because nothing beats it. And as much as I talk 40K and read battle reports and watch stuff, when you're actually playing a game, and if you can't remember basic shit, you're just not going to win. It doesn't matter how many things you do. So,
indeed. Speaking of practice, the unthinkable happened the same weekend. Ray and I actually got a game in
against
each other. So a podcast slap fight occurred this past Monday. So, Ray, how would you describe the game?
I forgot almost everything.
I really felt bad because I've never played a Space Marine army, so I kind of knew like a little bit. Luckily, another friend of ours was kind of there to help coach Ray through. Don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that. All those little things and you know, bolter drill and I don't. But it was yeah, it was a lot of learning curve. But the other thing too, though, is you know, Ray, you've been a long time Thousand Suns player, so I was like, I was all ready for getting my butt kicked in the psychic phase, and he rolls up with Ultramarines. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm not ready for this.
And that's exactly why I decided to do that.
Thanks, appreciate it.
So, just a little bit of backstory. When the Gladiator Reaper came out, I know people talk, you know, down on the Gladiators. I was really curious to see how that would do against an army that tends to be very infantry specific, in this case, Drukhari. So I built a list around, I actually built a list around two. And I'm like, all right, let's see what I can do with this. And I think anybody who actually knew what they were doing would have done a very good job, actually. But since I didn't, not quite so much.
Yeah, it's just there. Yeah, didn't quite go as planned, but it was still a good game. Good to get. I had to shake some rust off as well. Made a couple of mistakes, like similar to like you talked, Jim. But I think I forgot to do my scanners, whatever it's called, Achieve Octaris Data, whatever it is. Rod. Yeah, Rod. It's like, oh yeah, just forgot to do that. Oh crap. End of the moving phase. Make sure to do this sort of things, you know, the healing and all that stuff. Yeah. Practice. That made a big difference. And in the game before Ray, I played, again, guy who everywhere I've seen him play, he plays Custodes. He shows up to play me. He brings orcs. I'm like, what the? I'm not ready for this. So I got my first foray into the new Codex Orcs, and that was alarming to have 80% of his army in my deployment zone on turn two. I've not seen that happen to me in a while. So, but it was still a good game, and I was able to pull it out by 2 points. But there was lots to learn and lots to a lot of mistakes were made on both sides. So. Kind of got lucky on that one. So practice. That's all we can do. All right. So that's the action we've had over the past week or so. Talked a little bit about the tournaments for next week. And what about the other tournaments this past week? We had 5 GT level events and higher. So Ray, what events did we have this past week?
All right. You want to start with the Iron Halo?
Let's get that one, the big one for the weekend.
All right. Our top 5 looked like this. We had Aaron Cook playing Adeptus Custodes. And 4th, Tim Royers playing Imperium. And 3rd, Dan Sammons playing Orcs. And 2nd, Colin McDade playing Orcs. And in 1st place, Ben Cherwin playing Grey Knights.
A big win for Grey Knights at this point. Now, Ben's been pretty competitive all season long, but it's nice to see Grey Knights right out of the box. So, took a look at the list real quick. His opening detachment are Swordbearers, featuring a Brotherhood Tech Marine and a Grandmaster and a Nemesis Dread Knight. Surprise, surprise. A Strike Squad, 2 Nemesis Dread Knights, and then a 2nd Patrol featuring Blades of Victory. This also featuring a Tech Marine and a Grandmaster and Nemesis Dread Knight. This time, 2 Strike Squads of 5, Interceptor Squad, actually 2 Interceptor Squads of 10, and then in the Heavy Support Squad, a 3rd Nemesis Dread Knight. And this seems to be the model, I guess, the meta list of how Grey Knights are played. Jim, did you have any run-ins with this particular type of list?
Nope. No comment.
Yeah, the thing I'm worried about this list is there's like zero hobby lag. I mean, if you have Grey Knights, you have these models, you know, this, and you just dust off your list from 5th edition and you probably have these models ready to go. Other big shock for this weekend, Colin McDade also going 6-0, so, but he was unable to catch Ben Sherman for the title on battle points. He gave up on Harlequins and he's playing orcs. Huh? What is up with that? Got to get him back on the show and atone for his sins playing orcs. What are you thinking? Dan Samus also with orcs is interesting. So we have orcs second and third and custodes rounding out the top five. Other notables in there, Bam Bam Hunter coming in 9th with Grey Hunters. Johnny Velasquez with Thousand Sons coming in 11th. And that is pretty much the top of the list. We're seeing Ben will be in Vegas this coming weekend, for the team tournament as well. I have to double check if Colin's going to be on the list. I didn't see him there. But and yes, the lists are still frozen at this point, so we can't look at them just quite yet. Ray, what's our next event?
Next event is the Twisted Onslaught Devastation.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. In fifth place, we had Chris Tull playing Cult Mechanicus. Fourth was Franco McDonald playing Chaos. Third, Lee Jones playing Thousand Sons. Second, Chris Woods playing Thousand Sons. First, Manny Chima playing Cult Mechanicus.
And what makes this amazing is Manny scored 595 points out of possible 600. So that's crazy. So he was already knocking on the door for the ITC top 10 spot. So this will definitely vault him into the top spot, to at least the top 10 area. All right, our next event.
Next one is the Carnage Warhammer 40K. Here we go again, lads. 2-day GT.
Loving these names this week. All right. What's our top five look like there?
In fifth place, Jeff Beery playing Deathwatch. Fourth, Pablo Pradas playing Dark Angels. And third, Garrett Befera playing Freebooters. Second, Johnson playing Jukari. And in first, Brian Jones playing Imperial Knights.
Wow. Interesting. Knights at the top spot. All right. What is our next event this week?
Next one I've got pulled up is the Factorian.
Back to merry old England. Okay.
In fifth place, Chris Owen playing Adeptus Custodes. In fourth, Cad Giel playing Imperial Knights. Third, Sam Nash playing Space Wolves. Second, Matthew Chin playing Necrons. And in first, Michael Costello playing Deathwatch.
So that's three of the top five, including the first and second, going to Vanguard Tactics. So impressive outing for them. All right. Was that our last event?
No, there was the one last one that was in Sweden.
Yes. Here we go. Let's listen to Ray pronounce Swedish names. It's always fun. A fan favorite.
Yeah, I'm not going to try giving the full name for the tournament itself. I'm just going to call it Matt Hammer. So here's the top five. In fifth place, Axel Ryden playing Harlequins. Fourth, Jonathan Slay Johnson playing Adeptus Sororitas. Third, Rickard Nilsson playing Cult Mechanicus. In second, Oscar Lemming playing Jukari. And in first, Carl Abrahamson playing Grey Knights.
So Grey Knights take a second GT on the weekend. By the way, that Harlequin list, I took a quick glance at it. It's actually a mixed Eldari list. It's basically the Shaw Naden list with all the Night Spinners and Dark Reapers. And the Grey Knight list is... Oh, he's a little different. He's got a Librarian instead of the Tech Marine, but pretty much the same. Actually, I take that back. He only has two Nemesis Dread Knights. So, oh well. Makes up with a Purgation Squad and Double Rhinos. Interesting. With Interceptor Squads. So who knows? We'll see if we see more of the Grey Knights. All right. Jim, what do you got going on your stream this week?
Zero. I am getting ready for LVP Punch Painting to do and don't really feel like streaming this week because I just want to practice and prep work because I'm their team captain, so gotta get, once the list is released, I gotta go through, start building up matchups and our matchup document and stuff like that. So lots to do this week that is not. And then for my painting, I'm just working on some Chaos Spawn right now. So I need, although I don't need to get them done, I'd like to get them done because they are, the current spawn I have are quite old. So If I can finish these and get all my matchups done for LVTT, I'll be a happy camper.
All right. By the way, your Infernal Master came out. Awesome. You've had a chance to see that. Check that out on Jim's social media pages for Jimbo Paints. It's pretty amazing looking. Ray, any more outings on your solo podcast?
Not since the episode I did, or last at this point. I'll have a new one out pretty soon. It's just sometimes the traffic gets so crazy, I feel like I'm better off not trying to. I don't want people to do nothing but horns blaring, because people drive stupid.
It's almost like a rite of passage that every now and then a podcast has to do a tournament report when they're coming back from the tournament, and you just hear the GPS like giving directions in the background. It's always fun. But that is our show for this week. Look forward to a huge wrap-up next week of both the team tournament as well as the London GT. So my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening for the Exterminatus podcast. There we go.